saying that playing Hamlet was the role of a lifetime, and she would do anything for Carrig. You're assuming Ben Kelly knew nothing about Shakespeare before that? He's a jock. He's Irish. We all know our Shakespeare Miss America. Maybe they were practicing the sword thingy? Fencing? Amusement danced in Danny's eyes. Yes, perhaps it was when they were fencing with those sword things that he got the idea. Tara thrust an invisible sword. Danny swatted it down. He grabbed her around the waist and hauled her up. She was really drunk. It was all this stress. She always drank fast when she was nervous. Normally she knew when to stop, but here it was like the pints just kept flowing. And the music. She loved the music. And the people. Well, she loved some of the people.
I think I should get some things straightened out before we go,
Tara said as she tried to keep up with Danny. He was pulling her through the crowd toward the door.
Not today.
Tara couldn't believe she had to leave, and they were all staying. They were drinking just as much as she was, more even, and they were all still standing.
Why aren't all of you drunk?
Because we can hold it, Danny said. You, on the other hand, are a mess.
It's probably because I almost died, she said, when my bike went over that cliff.
She started to laugh. It hadn't been funny in the moment, but for some reason it seemed funny now.
Jesus, Danny said. I don't think you're Irish at all.
She stumbled outside, Danny holding her up. The fresh air immediately soothed her.
So beautiful here,
she slurred, trying but failing to walk straight. I am so drunk. Danny was an excellent minder, which was much needed considering the closer they got to Johnny's cottage, the rockier the terrain. Not easy to stumble home in this condition. Without Danny, she probably would have tripped in a field and been woken up by cows.
Moo,
she said.
Moo.
Jesus,
Danny said. The next thing she knew, she was being lowered onto the sofa in Johnny's cottage. Danny had handed her water that was fizzing.
Alka-Seltzer?
Solpidine. Trust me. Your head'll thank me in the morning.
His last words echoed through her head as she fell asleep. Trust me. Could she? Chapter 23. Danny was nowhere in sight when Tara woke the next morning. Her neck was stiff, but she was surprisingly okay otherwise. That little fizzy drink he had given her had done wonders. The rain was coming down, whispering at her to stay on the sofa all day, and for a few serious seconds she considered it. A cell phone rang. It made her jump. She didn't have a cell phone. There was one sitting on the coffee table. She answered it, perplexed.
Hello?
How's the head?
It was Danny.
Whose phone is this?
It's yours now. Grabbed one for you this morning, I did.
What time is it?
11:30.
Oh my God.
Tara couldn't remember the last time she'd slept until almost noon.
The head?
Danny asked again.
Thanks to you, it's great.
He chuckled.
No more wakes for you.
Here's hoping.
Jokes aside, I just spoke with our solicitor. Apparently there's been a report to the city planners that our building is not up to code.
What do we need to do?
She heard him sigh.
I'm still trying to get the details and the potential cost.
Is this Ben Kelly's work?
That's the rumour.
Do you need help?
I need Johnny.
What?
If Johnny has paperwork that grandfathers the building in before this code was written, we could make this all go away.
Have you searched his office?
Top to bottom.
Was Danny hoping Tara would run off to ask Johnny about this matter and lead Danny right to him? She hated this, warming to him one minute, suspecting him the next.
I guess we keep looking.
For Johnny or the paperwork? He asked.
Both. As she hung up the phone, she thought of Johnny huddled in some other dark storeroom on this rainy day, Emmett and Carrig in early graves. With each thought, her motivation to move lessened. She snuggled under the blanket. Just a few more minutes. Tara was reaching for the door to the mill when a figure emerged from around the corner. She jumped and let out a little yelp, even as she processed Rose standing in front of her, black and white hair blowing in the wind. The rain was coming down, but Rose stood there, dripping and staring. Rose almost smiled.
Put the heart in your crossways, did I?
If that means you scared me half to death, then yes. Tara pushed open the door and waited for Rose to enter. She flicked on the light, still shivering as the wind slammed the door against the rain.
I heard what happened to you on your way home, Rose said, her voice barely a whisper.
Tara glanced up at the second floor. Alana was probably at cookery school, but, like Rose, she didn't want to take any chances. She gestured for Rose to follow her to her office. Once there, she cleared papers off a chair for Rose and sat behind Johnny's desk.
Someone tried to kill me, Tara said.
It was the first time she had said this to anyone other than the guards.
That curve is deadly. Are you sure it wasn't just a close call?
I'm sure. The person was wearing a hood and large sunglasses and a bandana around the mouth, and he or she deliberately cut me off and bumped my bike.
I tried to tell you.
Death was all around me? Tara asked. Rose nodded. I don't suppose you're going to tell me where my uncle is this time?
I don't know where he is, Rose said. He must have left shortly after you did.
I thought you'd be angry with me, Tara said, for telling the guards. Rose wiped dust off the desk with her finger.
I knew you would tell them. I think it's for the best that he comes out of hiding. He won't listen to me.
You wanted me to follow you? Tara said, knowing I'd have to report it? Rose sighed.
I won't admit to that, but I wish he wasn't so stubborn. He's going to be in trouble now, even after they unmask the true killer.
Rose leaned back in her chair.
Do they know what time Carrig was murdered?
This threw Tara for a second. Yes, they were able to narrow it down from the end of rehearsal to the next morning.
As I thought, I was with Johnny the entire time.
If you're his alibi, why not go to the guards? He's getting himself in worse trouble by hiding.
I'm his lover, and not exactly loved in this town. They would never just take me word for it.
I don't like keeping this from Danny. Rose's eyes widened. She clasped her hands.
You must.
I need to get a question to Johnny about an eviction notice we received. Rose gasped.
Ben Kelly,
she said. She clamped her lips and shook her head. I suspect, Tara said, someone has reported a supposed building violation to the city planners. We have 30 days, well, 29 days, to respond. Danny thinks Johnny might have paperwork that proves something about being grandfathered in to whatever this violation is, but we can't find it. Rose nodded.
I told you the truth. I don't know where he is.
Do you know where my cell phone is? Rose had the decency to look ashamed. She reached in her bag and plunked it on the desk.
We had to give him a head start. What I didn't count on was you almost getting killed.
You have to promise me. You'll tell me if you hear from him, Tara said. Rose nodded.
You have me word.
Just as Tara was about to leave to walk Hound, the black phone on Johnny's desk rang, sending her heart fluttering into her throat once again.
Hello?
This is Dawson Securities. May I speak with Johnny Meehan?
He's not in.
Tara kept her voice steady. The caller either knew full well Johnny was missing, or he was not calling from Galway.
May I speak with someone in charge of your security system?
Dawson? That's why she recognized the name. That was the company Danny hired to set up the security cameras. This is Tara Meehan. You can speak with me.
We just got an alert that all your cameras have been disabled.
Disabled? How?
That's what I'm trying to ascertain. Are you near a camera now?
Tara glanced at the ceiling. There in the corner, pointed directly at the desk, was one of 8 cameras that had been installed.
Yes.
Is there a red light flashing or a green light?
Tara stepped closer.
A red light. It's disabled. It should be green.
How did this happen?
In some instances, weather or system upgrades can knock a camera or two offline, but all 8 of yours went off within minutes of each other, suggesting to us that they have been manually disabled.
Manually disabled? Somebody had shut off all the cameras?
When was this?
We were alerted just now. Our overnight employee had an emergency of his own, so we can't give you the exact time they went offline. The good news is, if you have a ladder, I can tell you how to switch them back on.
Thank you. Tara listened to the instructions and hung up. Turning them back on was not her main concern. The fact that someone had deliberately turned every camera off was stealing her focus. Danny O'Donnell. The question boomeranged to her once again. Was it him? He seemed genuine when he said he wanted the security cameras installed in the salvage mill. Had it all been an act? Could she trust him? Or was Johnny Meehan's right-hand man the killer they'd all been searching for? Danny didn't show up for his shift. Tara had tried calling several times. She still had no idea where the man lived. At the very least, she wanted to tell him about the cameras and gauge his reaction. She also didn't want to be on a 20-foot ladder in the rain, trying to turn security cameras back on. She tried calling Alana and got her voicemail as well. It had to have been either Alana or Danny who messed with the cameras, unless someone else out there had a key to the mill. Tara supposed that was possible, maybe even likely, given that Johnny had been here his entire life. And until the murders, this was a place where some folks still didn't even lock their doors, and visitors were known to pop in at any time of the day or night. And when they did, they would be welcomed in with tea and digestives. She was on her way out the door when Alana burst in.
There you are,
she said, as if she had been looking for Tara all night. Don't you have school? Alana narrowed her eyes.
We're all working out of our own kitchens today.
Were you looking for me? Alana nodded.
Danny wanted me to give you this.
She dug into her pocket and handed Tara a note. Heard from our friend George, gone to see him. Alana watched as Tara read it.
Who's George?
Nobody.
Tara shoved the note in her pocket. Why was Danny going to see O'Malley? Why not bring her or call her? He was the one who had given her a cell phone. It was no mistake that he had given the note to Alana. He wanted to be long gone by the time she read it. What was he up to? What if the killer was circling in on him, setting him up? Or what if Danny was the killer and he was circling her, setting her up? Alana brushed past Tara and headed upstairs.
What are you going to cook?
Alana stopped.
Sorry? You said you were cooking from home today?
Right.
Tara wondered if there was much of a kitchen upstairs.
May I see your place?
Excuse me?
I've never seen your flat. I'd love to have a tour.
Not today.
Alana plodded up the rest of the steps.
I suppose the smells will start wafting down soon.
Smells?
Cooking?
Oh, right.
Unless you're doing your homework somewhere else?
I haven't decided yet.
Alana stomped up the rest of the stairs. A few seconds later, her door slammed shut. Tara stood, taking deep breaths. She had purposely not mentioned the cameras. If Alana had been the one to disable them, Tara didn't want her to know she was on to her.
If she had nothing to do with it, Tara didn't want her to know they were off. She had already turned the one in the office back on, climbing on top of the desk as a way of reaching the camera. If there was a ladder hanging around, Tara couldn't find it. She was more interested now in why Danny was going back to the Aran Islands. But there was one more thing she wanted to do first. Tara called a taxi. It was time she paid a visit to a certain cookery class. Chapter 24. Tara stood in front of the Galway Cookery School, surprised to find an adorable cottage cafe situated on a busy street, open for both classes and the public. The students worked back in the kitchen, and as Tara entered, she was greeted by no less than three young, smiling faces welcoming her to the cafe. Trays sailed by, filled with mini quiches and fruit, and the smell of baking bread wafted out from the kitchen. There was a garden in the back visible through French doors, and it was thriving with herbs and flowers. This was her kind of cooking school. She let herself be seated, which hadn't been her plan at all, but now that she was here, she simply had to try the food. A young girl waited on her, and Tara waited until after she was served a cappuccino and had ordered wheat pancakes with berries and fresh cream, to ask if the girl was a student.
"I'm a graduate," she said, smiling. "I was offered a permanent position here."
"Congratulations."
"Thank you."
She started to walk away. "I was wondering if I could speak with the instructor." The girl turned, her face slightly aghast.
"Is there something wrong?"
"Not at all. I wanted to talk to her about the program." The beaming smile was back.
"I'll let her know."
A tall woman with blonde hair pulled into a tight bun and big glasses rimmed in neon pink delivered the pancakes. They were heaped with blueberries, strawberries, and, as promised, fresh cream. Tara allowed herself a moment of hedonism.
"I'm Lady B," the woman said. "This is my cafe and cookery school."
Tara didn't want to tear her eyes away from her plate, but had no choice. The woman laughed, putting Tara at ease.
"How about we have a chat when you're finished?"
"Thank you," Tara said, loving the woman already. The sun was out, so they sat in the back garden. Lady B insisted on tea service, and Tara wasn't about to complain.
"Were you interested in catering services?"
"Actually, I wanted to check a reference."
"You could have just called."
"I'm so glad I didn't. That was delicious." A smile came and went as quickly as the Irish weather.
"I'm not sure I can help. I get a lot of students."
"Alana Kelly?" Her eyebrow arched up.
"Lovely girl."
"Yes." "No."
"She did receive a certificate of completion."
Lady B didn't offer more, although Tara could see a lot swimming behind her brown eyes.
"Completion?" Tara said, trying not to sound too alarmed. "Yes. Her attendance was a bit spotty during the 12 weeks.
12 weeks?
"Yes."
Suspicion had landed. Lady B was on alert.
"I'm sorry, I thought the program was several years."
"No.
When did Alana attend?" "I'd have to check to be sure, but I believe she was with the late January group."
"So that would have ended in April."
"Correct."
Lady B set down her tea.
"You're Johnny Meehan's niece."
Tara sighed. That darn Irish grapevine.
"Yes." "Why in the world would you be interested in Alana's attendance last winter?"
"She's a tenant. I'm currently filling in for my uncle."
"I see."
Lady B continued to stare.
"She's a decent cook, but I don't think that's where her true passion lies."
"I heard she wants to box," Tara said.
"Yes, I think she took the classes to appease her father.
Tara was sure Alana's father thought the cooking course was much longer than 12 weeks. Was he still paying for classes she wasn't taking? And if he was this any of Tara's business? She lied about her alibi, but she had lied to Tara, not necessarily the guards. Had the guards even questioned her? Or were they only trying to find Johnny, still convinced that he was the killer?
She's a lovely girl, if that helps, Lady B said. I'm sure she'll be a wonderful tenant.
Thank you.
Come back for supper some night.
I will. Lady B walked her back inside the cafe, and then to the front door.
I don't want to step out of place, she hesitated.
Go on.
Have you met Alana's father?
Yes.
He's a bit old-fashioned. He's the only reason Alana took classes with me. It was obvious from day one that it was his idea, not hers. I wasn't as strict with her as some of my other students who truly want to become chefs. You're probably not used to the ways of the older generations here. I just thought you should know, in case you were thinking of stirring things up. I think she could use a break.
They held eye contact. Tara suddenly felt guilty. She had been dropped in the middle of all these lives, each brimming with drama, and she was stirring things up. Wasn't it worth it to find a killer? One that had already struck twice? Tara thanked her and headed out. Another warning about Ben Kelly. Alana's lies were most likely a lifelong habit, to avoid the wrath of a father who had different ideas about how his daughter would live her life. Tara began to walk. It helped her think Alana also had access to the key at the inn, the key with drops of blood on it. Had she killed Emmett, then raced to the inn? Had she been unaware there was blood on her? Was she the hooded figure in the car? It just didn't make sense. Why kill Emmett? Perhaps there was a case to be made if she had killed Johnny. But Emmett? And then Carrig Murray? Alana wasn't involved in theatre. Motive was the thing to look at. Who wanted Emmett Walsh dead? Who gained the most if he was gone? Tara wished she could access everything the guards could. Did the wife and kids get everything in Emmett's will? Had the wife snuck into Ireland to kill her husband? That was probably far-fetched, and assuming Carrig Murray was killed by the same person, then the entire theory was shot. Johnny was connected to both victims. Johnny was hiding. Tara had to admit it was possible the guards had it right, that Johnny Meehan was their man, a murderer. She needed to see Johnny again. He had to turn himself in. She would get him the best lawyer. She would keep investigating. And she would accept the truth, even if it meant her last living relative would spend the rest of his life behind bars. Chapter 25. Tara wondered if the guards were still processing Carrig's room at the Bay Inn. She also hadn't had a chance to speak with Grace about the key or about the harp and rose. She didn't relish running into the guards at the inn, especially Gable, but she had to see what was transpiring before she did anything else. After the inn, she would find Ben Kelly and confront him about his secret meetings with city planners. There had to be some amicable way to sort this out. She left yet another message with Danny and tried not to overanalyze when he didn't pick up. She needed to speak with him about the security cameras and the lease on the retail shop. At this point, she was starting to wish she had never started investigating Johnny's disappearance. She had a spotlight on her now, and the killer seemed to be several steps ahead of all of them. Tara almost expected to see guard cars parked near the inn, and waited to see yellow crime scene tape. But there was no one standing in front of the inn, nor were there any guard cars to be seen. Tara stepped into a lobby so quiet she could hear the clock behind the counter ticking. Grace was just ending a phone call and looked startled when Tara approached. She quickly covered it with a smile. Tara glanced at the parlour doors. They were shut.
Is Alana here?
No. She has exams today.
No, she doesn't. Have the guards already left?
The guards?
To process room 301. Astonishment lit up Grace's face.
What on earth are you talking about now?
Oh my God, Tara said. She didn't tell you?
Tell me what?
Carrig Murray stayed here the same night that Emmett was killed. Grace straightened up.
He most certainly did not.
He did, Tara said. Alana found the body of the cast iron pig in the dresser. That's why she wanted me to switch rooms. And that's why there was blood on the key. Grace slid a glance toward the cubbyholes, but didn't reach for a key.
You've lost your mind.
Alana told me she was calling the guards. They have to process the room. Grace swiped the key for room 301 from the cubbyhole and started up the stairs. Tara hurried after her.
I don't know what you're up to, but I want you to stop it.
I don't think you should go in there. It's a crime scene.
This is my hotel. Do not tell me what to do.
She was fast for an old lady. At least put on gloves, Tara said.
Don't be ridiculous.
Grace forged ahead.
Stop! I'll do no such thing. In me own inn, you have some nerve, so you have.
Tara took out her mobile and called 999. Detective Gable, please. It's an emergency. Grace stopped in the middle of the stairwell.
What are you doing?
I saw the room, Tara said. The police need to go through it. Brianna tried to take a message. Detective Sergeant Gable wasn't taking Tara's call.
I need guards over at the Bay Inn right away.
Tara hung up, then met Grace's eyes filled with rage.
You're nothing but trouble. I knew it the moment I realized who you were.
She whirled and headed back down the stairs, her hands shaking with rage. Tara followed.
What's that supposed to mean? Don't make me say it. Don't make me speak ill of the dead.
You'd better be talking about Emmett or Carrig, Tara said.
I most certainly am not.
Grace reached the desk, and Tara could hear her wheeze as she tried to breathe. Do you need an inhaler?
The only thing I need is for you to get out and stay out.
Tara went to the stand across from the check-in desk and poured Grace a glass of water. She was surprised when she took it, half expecting Grace to pour it over her head. She waited until Grace had taken a few sips and her breathing had calmed down before continuing. Everyone here is hiding something, Tara said, including you. Grace guzzled her glass of water like it was her last.
You think you're helping, but you're actually hindering the investigation. Whose investigation? You are not a detective.
I'm trying to protect my uncle and our business.
Your business?
My mother had a legal right to half of the business. That's between me and my uncle. Grace slammed the empty cup down on her counter.
What about my business?
What about it?
You're going to ruin my reputation spreading your lies.
I'm not lying. I saw the room. Ask Alana.
Carrig Murray did not stay in this hotel. Not recently. Not ever.
You'll see. When the guards get here, you'll see. Tara stopped. This probably was not the right time, but it was now or never. Rose has your cast iron harp.
Grace gasped. She stole it?
She said you gave it to her.
More lies. Why would I do that?
There was a note with it. On the inn stationery, it said, an old harp for an old harpy. Grace shook her head.
I would never.
Was she lying? If she was, she was a very good actress. Then again, you had to be good at a lot of things to get away with murder.
You're saying you did not give Rose the harp? I did not.
Why would I do that?
Well, someone did, and she assumed it was you.
Where is it?
In her caravan.
Have you told the guards? She's a thief and a liar. Why aren't you over there accusing her of being a killer?
Please stay with me for a moment. Why would Rose steal your harp and then type a nasty note to herself on the stationery from your inn?
Why would I give Rose me own harp and then pretend it's missing?
Funny, I was wondering exactly the same thing. The door opened, startling both of them. The guards had arrived. They stood in room 301, four guards, staring at Tara as she and Grace entered. It was sparkling clean. There was nothing in the dresser. No pig. No blood. No mess.
I was right here before discovering Carrig's body. I saw the pig. Alana told me Carrig came here the same night morning Emmett was killed, presumably after the murder, with part of the murder weapon as if he was cleaning up, hiding his tracks.
And why would he leave the room a mess if he went to such trouble to hide his tracks?
Gable asked. That was a good question.
I'm just telling you what I saw, what Alana said.
Detective Gable sighed.
She also said that Roseburn has my stolen harp,
Grace said. She nudged Tara.
Tell them about that.
It's true, she has the harp and a note.
Gable held up his hand.
Enough. You'll have plenty of time to tell us at the station.
At the station? Fear tickled Tara's throat.
Yes. You're coming with us.
I can tell you everything right here. Call Alana.
She was going to lie. She had already lied. Or had Grace lied? Did Alana tell Grace about room 301 first? Had she immediately cleaned out the room, wiped out the evidence? Why would she do that? Was Alana running scared? Had the killer somehow threatened her after Tara left? Or had Alana played Tara like a harp? Maybe it wasn't Carrig who stayed in that room. Her father. Or maybe the room was simply used to hide evidence of a murder. Lady B from the cooking school was right. Tara was stirring things up. It wasn't worth it if it put an innocent person in danger. She had to make sure Alana was okay.
Unless you're arresting me, I can't go to the station right now.
Why is that?
Gable walked to within a few inches of her face.
I have an important meeting with the city planners.
Now she was doing it, lying. It was awful. But she didn't have time to sit around a station. She wanted to find Danny and see what Ben Kelly was up to at this very moment. Either you come to the station voluntarily or I will arrest you, Gable said. Your choice. Tara sighed. Just let me make a phone call. She turned to Grace.
At least show them the key to 301.
Grace sighed, then grabbed the key. She stared at it. Tara stared at it. Gable stared at it. It was sparkling clean.
Tell them, Tara said to Grace. Tell them there used to be blood on it.
Gable shook his head.
I don't have time for games.
There was something on it, Grace said. I thought it could be nail polish.
Tara turned to Grace.
Alana said she wasn't going to give me room 301 because of a leak. Was there really a leak?
Grace bit her lip.
I haven't gone through the records.
Tara was confident there were no records.
Surely if a plumber came in to fix a leak, you would remember.
You're not a detective, Gable said. Let's go.
Grace remained silent, but Tara could tell the wheels in her mind were spinning. The only question was it the wheels of a murderer trying to juggle all the lies, or was it an elderly lady frightened for her life?
Outside, Gable said. Make your phone call, and make it quick.
Chapter 26. Tara stood on the sidewalk, wishing she felt as cheerful on the inside as the streets of Galway were on the outside.
She wished she was just a tourist and that her biggest problem was whether to go into this pub or that pub. Right now, she'd take any of them. Danny answered on the third ring.
Are you all right?
He said.
Did you get my message?
Yes, Tara said. And I want to hear all about your second visit with George.
We also have that meeting with the solicitor. Do you want to meet at the mill?
I'm on my way to the Garda station, Tara said.
Oh, no, Danny said. What happened?
Apparently they have a lot of questions for me.
For you?
Tara sighed. Gable was glaring at her. I'll tell you later, but before I go, Dawson Security called me. The security cameras at the mill are disabled.
What?
Did you have anything to do with that?
Course not. When?
Yesterday. At least she thought it was yesterday. Was it the day before? So much was happening. Tara was losing her grip on time. The day before yesterday, a few days ago, I don't know. Danny's low laugh eased her mood a bit.
I'll take care of it.
Why didn't you call straight away? I was waiting to see you in person.
Let's go, Gable said. Are you going to need a solicitor?
Danny said.
No.
Am I? I know about the retail shop, too, she said. She was sick of secrets. I'm not mad. I just don't understand why you didn't tell me.
What retail shop? Now.
Gable wasn't joking around. I've got to go. Tara hung up. Now Danny was upset with her. What retail shop? Was he playing her? Or had he spoken with the real estate agent so long ago that he forgot? Maybe Heather had weaseled her into signing the lease by pretending someone from Irish Revivals had been interested in renting it. Now that she thought about it, Heather had consistently referred to her employee. Everyone in town knew about Tara and Johnny Meehan by now. Had she been played? Even if that were the case, she loved the retail shop. As soon as she was finished at the station, she might head over there just to start planning, to distract herself, make herself feel better. She didn't need this. She didn't want it. She supposed she was lucky that when Gable opened the back door to the guard car, she wasn't in handcuffs. But people were watching anyway. The Irish grapevine. She was starting to hate grapes. Brianna was behind the counter and offered a weak smile when Tara entered, flanked by Detective Sergeant Gable and the other guards. Tara tried to smile back, but she couldn't make her lips move in the direction she wanted, and feared it came out as more of a snarl. She felt nervous and could see how bad this looked from their perspective. She had been the one to discover both murder victims. They might easily think she was lying about room 301 and the blood on the key. They might think she was lying about her phone being stolen, and that's why she didn't tell them about discovering Johnny right away. And she was going around and talking to all the suspects? What if they sent her home? Could they? She didn't know her rights. She did know that Ireland offered citizenship to anyone whose grandparents were born here, and given her parents, according to her mother, her father was Irish too, had been born here. Then Tara could become a citizen. She'd never considered it before. But the more people wanted her gone, the more she wanted to stay. If that kind of obstinance wasn't an Irish trait, she didn't know what was. They led her to a room empty of everything but a long table and several chairs. Then they left her there. They were treating her like a suspect. She still had her phone, but she had a feeling they wouldn't be happy to see her using it. She didn't know who she would call anyway. Detective Gable returned, and to her surprise, set a cup of coffee in front of her. Thank you.
What else haven't you told us?
Tara chewed on her lip. Was this a good sign, or was he circling in for a kill?
Alana lied about her alibi.
Gable stared at her, his face turning red. He crossed his arms.
Go on.
I visited the Galway Cookery School. She only took their 12-week program, and that was last spring. When I asked where she was the morning Emmett was killed, she insisted she was in class.
She's been pretending to go every day. Ask Grace. Or her father. Alana Kelly is playing you for a fool, Gable said. He took a seat, but his arms remained crossed. She may be a liar, but that doesn't make her a killer. I'm just telling you what I know. What else? I think Carrick Murray was taking money from his theatrical production. And you know this? Tara sighed. She filled him in on their meeting with George. Gable glared. Is that it? Why would he sell George a light, then turn around and insist on getting it back? Gable tapped his pen. I suppose you have a theory. Tara shook her head. Still an open question. Let's focus on the matters that pertain to Emmett's murder. And by all means, if we have time, we'll move on to open questions. The sarcasm wasn't lost on Tara, but she was happy to move on. Johnny was going to propose to Rose, and for some reason he didn't. I found the stem of a rose left outside his cottage. He had a tattoo done recently of a rose with an engagement ring. So why didn't he propose?
You didn't think to ask him when you discovered his hiding place?
I was so stunned, I forgot all about it. I didn't even remember to ask Rose when I saw her.
Once more, Ms. Meehan, what does this have to do with the murders?
I don't know. You ask me to tell you everything, I'm telling you everything.
Gable jotted a few notes down, stared at his pad.
Don't stop now.
Tara held out her hands.
You get the significance of how Carrick was killed, don't you?
Gable's head popped up.
In what sense? Stabbed in the back? Or Shakespeare?
Danny was right. Most Irishmen did know their Shakespeare. Yay them.
Both, Tara admitted.
Leave those threads to me.
Gable shut his notebook.
I thought you wanted it all, Tara said.
Gable arched an eyebrow, opened his notebook again with a sigh, and waved for Tara to continue.
The security cameras around the mill were disabled by someone the other day, and the paint used to write Go Home Yankee was taken from in front of Rose's caravan. I confronted Alana, and she admitted to leaving the message.
She swallowed. This next one was a betrayal, but she had to come clean.
Remember the cast iron pig that Emmett Walsh hired Johnny to find?
How could I forget? That was the tipping point to their feud.
Tara didn't want to tell him. It didn't bode well for Johnny, but she was in way over her head, and she wasn't going to keep any more secrets.
I found out that the cast iron pig, the one that was used to kill Emmett, was a copy of the original.
Gable stopped writing.
What?
It was too late to turn back now. This wasn't her fault. She should never have been in this position in the first place.
I think Johnny was fed up with Emmett hounding him about it, so he cheated. I got a phone call from a man who did the work, asking if the client believed it, bragging about how good his workmanship was.
Gable crossed his arms.
Why? Am I just hearing about this now?
Tara pretended it was a rhetorical question and kept going.
And it might not be the first time I had planned on checking the authenticity of a granite slab, a cast iron harp, and an old theater light. These items involved Carrick as well.
Involved Carrick how?
He asked Johnny to find him a granite slab so that he could trade it for his old theatre light that he sold to George O'Malley in the Iron Islands.
Gable's right eye appeared to be twitching. Not such a ridiculous question now, is it? Tara felt sorry for him. Do you need a cup of tea?
No, I do not need a cup of tea. Keep talking.
Johnny told Rose that he was fed up with Ben Kelly trying to get his shop, and he thought they were all plotting against him. Everyone thinks my uncle was paranoid, but I think he was being targeted.
He's fabricating items and you're calling him the victim.
No, that's the problem with our case.
My case.
Of course, semantics. That's the problem with your case. Most of the suspects are guilty of something. But there's quite a span between lying or fabricating items or even spray painting a threat and murder. Fabricating items was wrong. Johnny will have to answer for it, but that doesn't make him a murderer.
Gable took a moment to think this over.
And who is framing him for murder?
Either Johnny is the killer or he's not. If he's not, the killer counted on him being fingered for it, and you've played right into his or her hands.
It's my fault now, is it?
Of course not. I'm just saying this killer we're dealing with, you're dealing with, is very, very smart.
And what do you think of us?
Us?
The guards. Are we very, very stupid?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
I've heard enough.
Gable stood. Tara shot up from her chair. She needed him to believe her. She needed him to take charge so she could go back to being a tourist. She could be on a tour bus to the Cliffs of Moher, or headed to Dublin for a change of scenery, or anywhere else for the crack.
She hadn't asked for this. I don't know why the theatre light was so important to Carrig. What if it was fake too? What if he was squeezing Johnny?
Even more reason to believe that I had our killer pegged from day one, he pointed at her. Johnny Meehan is our killer. He didn't run me off the road or disable the cameras or steal company money. Please get out of my station. I'm going to be needing headache tablets.
I didn't lie about the room at the inn. Maybe Alana spun this story just to make me look crazy.
I think you're doing a good job of making yourself look crazy. I want you to buy a plane ticket home within the next 24 hours. I want proof of your reservation.
Could he do that? You can't make me go home.
It's either that or I will arrest you.
You don't have the grounds to arrest me.
You're interfering with not one, but two murder probes. You're the one who told me not to leave town. This is for your own safety. That's for me to decide.
There was a knock on the door. Gable called for them to come in. Brianna poked her head in.
Danny O'Donnell is here with a solicitor.
He's insisting you let them in.
Gable turned back to Tara and studied her.
Interesting.
He's an employee, Tara said. He's looking out for me.
Not much of an investigator if that's the conclusion you're drawing, he said.
He pointed.
I want you on a plane or a train or a bus 24 hours from now. I don't care where you go, as long as it's a long way from Galway.
Chapter 27.
Thank you.
Danny had been surprisingly quiet on their way back to the mill. It was obvious he wasn't happy with her. She almost had to run to keep up with him. Apparently nothing much had come from his visit with George other than the old musician trying to get dirt on Carrig's murder and complaining that his theatre light was on the blitz.
He summoned you all the way out there for that? Do you think he knows anything about Carrig's murder?
Danny put his hand up.
You swore to me you'd stay out of this.
I tried. It keeps dragging me back in.
He stopped. She almost barreled into him.
I don't want to see you get hurt. I hate that Johnny is messed up in this.
His concern for her uncle was genuine.
You seem to be the only one in town who cares about him.
Are the guards still convinced he's our killer?
Tara sighed.
I don't know. I've told them absolutely everything. If it doesn't stir up some curiosity for someone other than my uncle, then they aren't interested in finding out the truth.
Tara didn't take the normal path to the mill. She cut right and headed for the retail shop.
Where are you going?
Danny called out.
To the retail shop, Tara said. Are you coming or not?
They stood in the middle of the shop, Danny open-mouthed, staring at the granite slab.
It wasn't me, he said again.
I've never been in here in my life.
But you're the one who told me you had this idea.
Yes,
I had this idea. And if I had gone scouting for shops, this is perfect.
But I didn't.
Tara was going to have to speak with Heather Milton. And you have no idea where that came from? She pointed to the granite slab.
That's the one Carrig was after, Danny said.
No, if Johnny got a hold of it, he didn't mention it to me.
I don't know what any of this has to do with our murders, Tara said, but there must be some connection.
Tara's cell rang. It was Victoria in New York. Tara had missed the deadline for the vision board.
I have to take this.
I have a few errands myself. I will see you later.
Danny gave her a nod and a wink and exited the shop. Tara had an urge to run after him in case he was about to go investigating after warning her not to, but instead, she went out to the garden and took the call.
Hey!
Tara was relieved for the distraction. Anyone else would have chit-chatted about Ireland, asked how she was doing. Victoria had one speed, and it was always set to go.
I need your vision board shipped by the end of today and send digital photographs ASAP.
That was a tight turnaround. She had been distracted by the investigation.
I don't know if I can.
You can, or you won't work for me again.
Got it.
Victoria clicked off. Her favorite form of goodbye. Tara stood in the middle of the retail shop, filled with a sense of renewal. Danny had given her the names and numbers of two lads who had agreed to bring a simple wooden table, two red leather chairs, and a Buddha statue over to the retail shop from the mill. She placed Buddha in the garden, hoping his calming presence and big stone belly would bring her good luck. For a moment, she empathized with how Emmett Walsh must have felt about his prized pig. His phony prized pig. She had been so wrapped up in other business she'd forgotten to mention that bit to Danny. Or had she deliberately left it out of their conversation, still unsure whether she could trust him? She glanced at the granite slab standing in the corner. She took out her cell phone and scrolled through the call history until she found George O'Malley's number. On a whim, she dialed. His voicemail picked up.
George, it's Tara Meehan. I have your granite slab. I don't know who will get possession of the one Carrig had, but I thought you'd like to know. Call me if you're still interested.
Maybe it was a long shot, but she wanted to examine the light fixture Carrig had been so desperate to get back. George O'Malley was in a wheelchair and all the way out on the Aran Islands. Unless he was faking his condition, he was not a viable suspect. He was still a piece of this puzzle, or the ornate theatre light he was coveting might be. She would like to gauge his reaction to Carrig's murder. If he was mixed up in this, the murder should frighten him. Maybe he would be willing to open up this time. Ben Kelly was another one she had to confront. The eviction and violation notices were also looming. She would have to tackle the easiest things first. She left a message with Heather Milton to call her back. She was going to find out just who had rented this retail space if it wasn't Danny. It was going to be difficult to concentrate on work, but she had to give it a try. Someday this would all be over and she couldn't afford to burn her bridges in New York. She centered the table in the room and set up the two easels and canvases she had purchased at a local art shop. She opened her computer and brought up the wish list from Victoria's eccentric client. Rustic, industrial, flair, unleashed. In parenthesis, Victoria had added, "He's one of those." She meant he had provided very little detail, leaving the designer freedom, but that also included the freedom to fail. Tara asked her to send photographs of the vision boards he'd already rejected. The first one was all modern and neon colors. The only rustic bit she could make out was a pair of antlers hanging above a fireplace. The second was way too rustic without any modern, all log furniture and flannel. What was the designer thinking? The third and last looked like Jackson Pollock had decorated stark white furniture with slops of paint. Tara would start with the furniture, the foundation upon which to build. She opened the layout of his penthouse in Manhattan.
It had bamboo floors and a wall of windows overlooking Manhattan from some 30 floors in the sky. She saw why the designers were having a hard time with the rustic element. The furniture would look funny if it was darker than the wood floors. She set up 4 canvases. Foundation, accessories accents, timeline, color schemes. She would check out the mill for furniture, but also look through online catalogues. She would find a fabric shop in town and hopefully collect samples. Excitement thrummed through her as she fell back into what she loved doing. This was fun, creative, fulfilling. If only there was a way to create a vision board to catch a killer. The thought caught in her throat. She stared at the categories. Couldn't she at least try? What sorts of things would she put under foundation? Everything she knew to be true. She changed foundation to facts. She glanced at the next category. Accessories, accents. This category could be changed to suspects. Timeline. This category could stay as is. She needed to establish a timeline before, during, and after the murder for both Johnny and Carrig Murray. Color scheme would change to motives. She would go back and buy more canvases for her work project. She wouldn't force any connections, just like designing a home. You had to let all of your ideas exist until one by one they dropped off, leaving the true intent. What is the killer's true intent? Was it over? Or did the murderer have more victims in his or her sight? She started with facts. Emmett Walsh was supposed to meet Johnny the morning he was killed. He showed up in the mill just before sunrise. Johnny wasn't there. Someone left a threatening note, typed, on the door to the mill. Emmett decided to go to Johnny's cottage. Someone lobs the cast iron pig at Emmett's head. Emmett dies in the doorway of Johnny's cottage. On the back wall of the cottage, in Emmett's blood, someone scrawls the name Tara. Then Kelly wants the salvage mill. Rose has been hiding Johnny. Someone dumped the murder weapon in the Galway Bay. The murder weapon, i.e. cast iron pig, was not an original. Johnny's boat is missing. Tara stopped and looked over the list. Shoot. She should have asked Johnny about his boat when she met him. She was going to have to make a list of questions in case she saw him again. Her eyes scanned over the list of facts. Why hadn't Johnny showed up for the meeting with Emmett? If only she had thought to ask him this as well. She added to the list of facts. Johnny arrives, sees Emmett's dead body. Writes Tara on the back wall? Tara stopped. Had Johnny confirmed this? No. He had emphatically denied it. Was he a liar or a truth teller? Until she knew for sure, she could not put this down as a fact. She drew a line through it. She wrote, Johnny didn't know Tara Meehan was in town. Now that was a fact, so he couldn't have written her name on the wall. She placed a square of red fabric next to that one, signaling it was something to pay attention to. She decided to put George O'Malley's name under motives. She couldn't see him as a suspect, then added a few more. Theatre light, cast iron pig, fake. Granite slab, hidden in shop. Shop not rented by Danny. Security cameras, cloaked hood, Shakespeare, harp, stem of a rose, proposal. Johnny hadn't mentioned the proposal, and neither had Rose. Had the murders thrown him off course? She supposed love was all in the timing. Something Johnny said came hurtling back to her. So sorry about the mess. I'm ashamed. She thought he had been referring to Emmett's murder, but what if he had meant something else? What if he was being literal? The warehouse had been organized, spotless. Danny showed some surprise. Johnny's office was a complete mess. Ben Kelly referred to the mill as a jungle. Either Johnny had suddenly cleaned up his act after all these years, or someone else had. Was someone else cleaning up after Johnny? Was it Rose? Tara drew a red rose under her suspects board. Rose was taking care of Johnny, literally making herself an accessory to murder. What if she was more than that? What if she was the mastermind? She had seen Tara in town within hours of Tara arriving.
What if she wrote Tara on the wall in blood? But why? Was she trying to frame her for murder to take the heat off Johnny? Was that why Tara registered shock in Johnny's eyes when she mentioned her name on the wall? A flash of the inside of Rose's caravan came to mind, spotless. And then there was the thorny stem left by her door. Death is all around you, Tara shivered. That would make sense, too. Rose, intent on killing, would have known because she was all around Tara. Had she killed Emmett to protect Johnny? Was that enough of a motive? Had Carrig somehow figured out it was her? Rose was not hanging around the caravan. She was in hiding with Johnny. Was she pretending to love him? Was he in trouble? Perhaps she knew death was coming because she was the one delivering it. Just a quick visit. Tara could just have a look. She thought of the keys hanging in Johnny's office. Did one belong to his girlfriend's caravan? Chapter 28. As Tara stood in Johnny's office clutching the clump of keys, the question wasn't going to be whether or not he had a key to Rose's caravan, but instead, which one was it? She could hardly stand outside Rose's caravan trying key after key without being spotted. Danny was coming in just as she'd given up. What's going on? Tara jiggled the keys. Rose wanted me to look in on her caravan. She said Johnny had the key. I have no idea which one it is. Danny went to the desk, opened the drawer, and pulled out a single key. Relief and guilt swept over Tara. Thank you. Now, tell me why you really want to get in there. There were too many things I forgot to ask my uncle when I met him. She knows where he is. And you're hoping, what? She's left a map open on her dining room table. I have to eliminate her. What if she's the murderer? What if she's the one who ran me off the road? She was the only one who knew for sure where I was that morning. You followed her on a bicycle, Danny said. Rose doesn't even drive a car. Rose doesn't own a car. Do you know for sure she doesn't drive a car? Danny blinked. No. What are you doing back here? I met with the attorney. He's given me a list of documents to find that might help. Thought I'd get started. His eyes travelled around the messy office. Have you spoken to Ben Kelly? My lawyer warned me not to contact him. Makes it less personal. Making it less personal was getting impossible for Tara to do. Everything about this case was getting personal. On a better note, Danny said, the cameras are back on.